How important is biblical prophecy? There was a time not long ago when many in the church ignored prophecy as a strange mixture of ancient writings and hard-to-understand symbols. However, today prophecy is in the forefront of biblical discernment, and once again it is being taught from the pulpits and discussed by people who are determined to understand the times that we live in. My conversation with prophecy expert Bill Salas is next on this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Remember that your failure to be informed does not make me a wacko.
The time has come, the walrus said. You talk of other things, of shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Hello, and welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio. Your host is Mike Spaulding. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged as you consider today's news and Mike's commentary from a biblical perspective. Now, let's join Mike.
Hi, friends. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio. As always, you can subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and of course, listen to every episode on our website, SoaringEagleRadio.com. My guest on this episode is Bill Salas, and I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long time. Many of his books, he is an author, researcher, lecturer, and the radio host of the popular Prophecy Update radio program heard in Southern California and worldwide over the web, www.prophecydepot.com. Bill has authored numerous books, including a couple that I've got sitting here right in front of me today, Psalm 83, The Missing Prophecy Revealed, How Israel Becomes the Next Mideast Superpower, and The Now Prophecies. Bill, welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio.
Hey, thanks, Mike. It's great to be on your program.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to join me. Events in the Middle East and everywhere have pushed prophecy once again to the center stage for a lot of Christians. And I know that for Bible researchers such as yourself, it's always been center stage. But let's begin with some reasons why people should study prophecy.
Well, biblical prophecy really does tell you the future with 100% accuracy. That is what God has intended it for, to inform us, not to impress us, but to inform us with advanced information that's intended to authenticate his sovereignty as God. We're told in Isaiah 46, verses 9, that he is God, there is no other. He says, I am God, there's none like me, declaring the end from the beginning. So it authenticates his sovereignty, but it also equips us for the days in which we live. So, for instance, it was very important for Noah to know the future, that a flood was going to come, so he could get busy and build an ark. And then also, that's another one of the purposes of prophecy, because it can spare lives. People who will go through prophecies need that information so they can prepare beforehand. And the most important thing, really, and you brought this up, is to save souls. You know, basically, prophecy can be used as a witnessing tool of evangelism. That's how I came to know the Lord, through a study of the book of Revelation being taught by Chuck Missler. Many of your listeners may be familiar with Chuck Missler, as an excellent Bible prophecy teacher. So, you know, and the thing is, so much is going on, as you know, right now, Mike, in the world, and the average person is trying to get some information mainly through the mainstream media. And they're getting the military perspective, the political perspective, et cetera. They're not getting the biblical perspective necessarily. And so therefore, what they want to know about the future, what will these world events happen, when they happen, how they will they affect the average person, these pundits are not going to be able to give them that information because they just don't know. Whereas the Bible can give that information, and most of these main players on the stage right now, Israel and Russia and Syria and Iran and even America, they're locatable in the Bible. And so therefore, what does the Bible have to say is very relevant, especially right now since things are spiraling out of control in these last days.
Well, they absolutely are. And just today, Bill, I received some news from a friend. We try to keep track on what's going on in the world, especially as it relates to prophecy. And so we always keep an eye on the Middle East, of course. And heard today that Hamas is once again doing some saber rattling over there and talking about attacking Israel again. And of course, the talking heads on television, they just don't have a clue what all of that means. They report it the wrong way. In fact, one of my sources, I'll refer to him as Sergeant Tim to keep him anonymous. But he says that it really looks like the Western media is pushing for war with Russia, which is just crazy. It's just absolutely crazy that they would be doing that. But it plays right along with the if I could call it this, the bubbling cauldron of intrigue in the Middle East. Russia, Bill, did you ever think that you would see the Iranian government partnering with Russia and allowing them to actually build military bases on Iranian soil?
And nuclear facilities. You know, Russia was instrumental in the crown jewel of Iran's nuclear program, the Bushehr nuclear reactor, which is by the Persian Gulf in the region of Bushehr. And that became operational, I think it was in 2010, around then. And it's loaded with Russian fuel rods. Well, since now the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action treaty deal with Iran has been consummated in July, I think it was of last year, 2015, $150 billion going Iran's way. Mm. Russia has contracted, again, I think two more facilities in that area, and one of them they broke ground on a few weeks ago. So, you know, Russia and Iran, now, you know, your common American would say, well, they make me nervous. Well, you know what? They're in the Bible. You know, you and I both know, yes, Mike, that they're together in a coalition, and probably one of the most well-described biblical prophecies in the entire Bible, in Ezekiel 38 and 39, and Iran is listed as Persia, and they used to be called Persia until 1935 when they were renamed, and that's a major event, and that's going to pin a coalition spearheaded by Russia, including Turkey and Iran, and several other Muslim populations. All of them are Muslim, except predominantly Muslim, except Russia. And it would include some North African countries, some breakaway Soviet Union countries. Mm-hmm. And it's going to come against little tiny Israel. None of these have ever been Israel's enemies in the past, per se, but they will be. And they're going to come after the plunder and booty that Israel will possess at that time. And so, you know, that we're seeing that start to converge. You know, right now, Turkey has some animosity with Israel. They're trying to bury the hatchet, mm-hmm. but we also see Turkey is convening with Russia more frequently now too. Mm-hmm. And even though they're Sunni and Iran are Shiites, you know, Russia's in alignment with Iran. Turkey's starting to get somewhat in alignment with Russia. Mm-hmm. So the point I'm making, Mike, is that we're seeing one of the most important Bible prophecies of the end times starting to converge right now, and that's got to be alarming for people who understand that, because that is a powerful prophecy.
Yes, that's for sure, Bill. I agree. Just a year and a half ago, no one would have thought that Turkey would do an about-face and cozy up with Russia. So, for sure, and I think that's a good segue into your book, The Now Prophecies. So, first, for our listeners, I guess we should hear from you. What exactly do you mean by the now prophecies?
Right. Okay, so when we look at biblical prophecy, J. Barton Payne says that 26.8% of the Bible is devoted toward Bible prophecy. He wrote the Encyclopedia of Bible Prophecy, and And as we look through the history books, we realize that about two-thirds of that or so has already found fulfillment exactly as specified by the ancient prophets. Yeah. But there's still a whole lot that hasn't. Roughly we're talking about 9 to 10,000 verses of the 31,000 plus verses in the Bible were devoted toward prophetic content. So the unfulfilled prophecies are probably still within a range of several thousand scriptures, verses. And so those prophecies are going to happen. And when they happen, they're not all going to happen in one 24-hour period of time. They're going to sequence themselves. They're going to happen in a sequential order. And they probably won't be spread out over 1,000 years. We're concerned that when they start to happen, they'll be like birth pangs, is an analogy Christ used in Matthew chapter 24, verse 8, dealing with the end times events. He said that they would come out like birth pangs. So in other words, the closer we get to the return of Jesus Christ and his second coming, the more these powerful prophetic events are going to happen. Like a woman about to give birth, her contractions become much more intense and more frequent, and they are unstoppable. And so that's the situation. And so my point is, well, what could happen now? What are the prophecies that lack any preconditions as we study their details? Because those are the ones we should be preparing for. Now, there are other prophecies. I categorize them in three categories. Now, which could happen now, there's no preconditions. Next, have some preconditions, but they're converging. They're starting to get ready, but they need the fulfillment of the now prophecies to happen before they can actually find their fulfillment on the timeline. And then there's some last prophecies or final prophecies that are coming close. We see them drawing near, like an Antichrist and, you know, the type of system where you can have a mark of the beast and things like that in Revelation 13. But those are a little bit further out. And when we say further out, we're not talking, you know, we're not saying rest on your couch, because we're not talking hundreds of years.
Right.
The first out could be 10 to 20 years or something like that, you know. So, but the imminent ones, it could happen right now. We could wake up tomorrow and they could be happening right now. There's quite a few of them, and those are the ones that are called the now prophecies. And just an example of how significant they are. You know, you have examples in the past, like we talked about Noah. Mm-hmm. Noah needed to know now at his time that a flood was coming. Joseph needed to know now at his time that there would be 7 years of famine coming in the land of Egypt, but they would be preceded by 7 years of plenty, so he could prepare for those 7 years of scarcity. Mm-hmm. Jeremiah needed to know that 70 years of captivity was coming into Babylon, so he could warn the people in the southern kingdom of Judah for that. He needed to know that now. Now, Jeremiah also knew, he also foretold events that would happen probably in our lifetime, in Jeremiah chapter 49 and elsewhere. Yes. But those weren't now prophecies for the Jewish people back then. So they were concerned really with what Jeremiah had to say about the Babylonian captivity that was coming. So we need to be concerned at our point on the timeline to what could happen now. What is the information God wanted us to know right now?
Yes. Yeah. Now, some people, Bill, poo-poo this idea, but I still believe that 1948 and the creation of the Jewish nation was a marker on God's timeline, and we could see that as a birth pang. Do you see it that way too?
I really do, and I think that's important to bring that up, because, Mike, when you're trying to figure out, well, where are we at on the timeline, what could happen to us now, we've got to find ourselves on that timeline. What is that prophetic timeline? And right now we are between two marquee events. The first event is the one you mentioned, and that was 68 years ago. That was the rebirth of the nation of Israel. Mm-hmm. And we're racing toward another one, which we'll talk about in just a second. And I think we're really getting pretty close to that, that second one. But, you know, the sad thing is, when you say some people poo-poo the miraculous prophetic fulfillment of the rebirth of the nation of Israel, you know, you're right. I mean, there are so many people in the world, and even in the church, sadly, that think the existence of Israel today is the moral obligation of the United Nations after the Holocaust, and they don't recognize God's conspicuous fingerprints on the whole process. And
that's right.
And there's a plethora of prophecies that were fulfilled when Israel became a nation. And one of the ones I quote is that Jeremiah 23:7, it says, "Therefore, behold, the days are coming, says the Lord, that they shall no longer say, as the Lord lives, who brought up the children from the land of Egypt." You know, that big deal when the Red Sea's parted.
Yeah.
And the Jews were always to remember that and memorialize it through the generations. And it was an evidence to the Jewish people throughout time that, listen, If our God can part the Red Seas and deliver us out of Egyptian bondage, he can handle any Goliath circumstance on behalf of the nation. And so basically it's, you know, no longer will they say that. That event will pale in comparison. And Jeremiah goes on to say, no longer will they say the Lord who brought us from the land of Egypt. But he goes on to say in verse 8, but as the Lord lives who brought up and led the descendants of the house of Israel from the north country and from all the countries where I had driven them, and they will, then they will dwell in their own land safely. You know, Mike, this is on a closing note on that. Well, we're seeing that happen right now. And, you know, the Sanhedrin, which they've now put back in place in Israel, just recently acknowledged that the fulfillment of the rebirth and regathering of the Jews into the land of Israel has now taken place. That's actually the Sanhedrin of Israelists have just acknowledged that. But, you know, so I would say to our listeners, you know, don't get caught up in what's called replacement theology, thinking that God's done with the Jewish people because they rejected Jesus 2,000 years ago, and now the church has replaced them. That is far from the truth. That's erroneous teaching. God is saying the rebirth of the nation Israel and the return of the Jew into the land is very important, and that is what sets up the stage for most all of the end times Bible prophecies.
Yes, amen. That's right. And my understanding of that teaching, that pseudo-theology, I call it replacement theology, Bill, is that it's really nothing more than just a remnant of the split between Rome. Well, during the Reformation, reformers held on to that attitude that Rome had cultivated. It goes all the way back to Augustine, I believe. And so it was just something that the reformers didn't do away with when they should have. And any clear reading of the scriptures would tell you that God is not done with Israel yet. So we move from there, and you mentioned Jeremiah chapter 49 just a moment ago. This might be a good time to talk about the now prophecy concerning Iran, the ancient prophecy of Elam.
Yeah, you know, that's a very important prophecy. Matter of fact, on the list of events that could happen now, I put that probably at the top.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about Iran just a little bit earlier, and their involvement with Russia in the Ezekiel 38 prophecy. But, you know, Ezekiel wrote that prophecy about 10 years after Jeremiah wrote a prophecy about Iran. And Jeremiah wrote about Elam, E-L-A-M, and Ezekiel wrote about Persia. And when you look at a modern-day map of Iran, you have both locations. And Elam is about one-fifth of modern-day Iran, and Persia is about the other four-fifths, and they were always geographically isolated by the Zagros Mountains. But Elam is very interesting because Jeremiah wrote this prophecy in 596 B.C. It is six verses, Jeremiah 49 verses 34 through 39. And basically, they're very powerful and potent and relevant for our time. And this is where that Bushehr nuclear reactor is, what we were talking about earlier. That is in, this is the area that hugs the Persian Gulf, and that's where that reactor is. It's a nuclear disaster waiting to happen. It's built on three tectonic plates where they converge. The Gulf states of the Arabs across the Gulf Cooperative Council of Saudi Arabia and Iraq and Kuwait and Qatar and Bahrain and the UAE and those countries are so concerned about this because two-thirds of the world's desalinization plants are in those Gulf states.
Mm.
And they're going to build a 1,242-mile pipeline for not oil but water because they're so concerned about an Israeli strike on that facility or an earthquake or something that they've studied. If that happened, they had a nuclear disaster, they believe within 24 hours their populations would be adversely affected, anywhere from 40 to 100% of their populations. So, you know, this is a really big deal, and this prophecy seems to be talking about a nuclear disaster, Mike.
It does, yeah. Yeah. Can I read it, Bill, for our listeners?
Yeah, go ahead, because it's only six verses,
yeah.
And then I'll unpack it after you read it.
Okay, Jeremiah 49, starting at verse 34. That which came as the word of the Lord to Jeremiah the prophet concerning Elam, at the beginning of the reign of Zedekiah, king of Judah, saying, thus says the Lord of hosts, behold, I am going to break the bow of Elam, the finest of their might. I shall bring upon Elam the four winds from the four ends of heaven, and shall scatter them to all these winds, and there will be no nation to which the outcasts of Elam will not go. So I shall shatter Elam before their enemies, and before those who seek their lives, and I shall bring calamity upon them, Even my fierce anger, declares the Lord, and I shall send out the sword after them until I have consumed them. Then I shall set my throne in Elam and destroy out of it king and princes, declares the Lord. Verse 39, but it will come about in the last days that I shall restore the fortunes of Elam, declares the Lord.
Yeah, so like I said, six verses, but extremely powerful, very telling information.
Mm-hmm.
In those verses, the Lord says he will do something seven times, and then he gives us a detail as to what he's going to do. And I like to say, well, look, here's the situation. What Jeremiah is telling us is that their time is going to come when the Lord is going to be fiercely angry with the leadership of Iran, and he's going to judge them, and there's going to create a disaster as a result. So mm-hmm. Here's how we understand that. He says he's really angry, and he's angry because there's bad leadership, and he's going to destroy that bad leadership. And he says he's going to destroy from there the kings and the princes. And then he says, then we get the reason why he's upset with them, because they want to launch something lethal somewhere. It says the Lord's going to prevent that. He's going to break the bow of Elam. Now, yes. The Elamites in ancient times, they were expert archers. So this really hits home when you talk about breaking their bow. Mm-hmm. But so he's talking about breaking their bow, but where? At the foremost of their might, at the pinnacle of their military power, where they could actually launch something lethal, he's going to prevent that from happening. Where do they want to launch that something lethal is the concern. Yeah. Obviously, it wasn't into Iraq. They launched all kinds of missiles into Iraq between 1980 and 1988. Mm-hmm. Now, I believe it could be they want to launch something into Israel. Mm-hmm. They vowed to wipe Israel off the map. But anyway, it says this is angering the Lord. The Lord will not destroy good leadership, but this is bad leadership. And, of mm-hmm. course, we've got Og regime in place right now. I believe this prophecy is for our time. And then what happens is when the disaster happens, he says he's going to bring the four winds from the four quarters of heaven and scatter them toward all those winds, the indigenous population. As a result of this judgment, the bow being broken, this disaster being created, a worldwide dispersion, it says there'll be no nations where these outcasts are not dispersed. That's what's going to happen. So that's the bad news for Iran. Their leadership is going to get seriously spanked. It's going to create a major disaster and a humanitarian crisis, it sounds. There is some good news, though, in those last two verses. He says he's going to set his throne in Elam and that he will ultimately bring back in the latter days. This is how we know it's a latter days prophecy. He's going to bring back those people who are dispersed. You know, so in other words, the Iranians who are dispersed, they're actually going to go through a period of time through the tribulation and stuff, and some who will survive will come to know Jesus as the Messiah. There'll be an Iranian remnant, and they will be brought back, the captives, those who into the Messianic kingdom is what's being said there. But what's interesting is that in Iran right now, there's the fastest growing evangelical population in the world. They're growing at a rate of 19.6% per year with dreams, visions, miracles, and healings. This is supernatural evangelism. Yes. The Lord is going in there where missionaries can scarcely get into.
Mm-hmm.
He is accomplishing his will, and it says he's going to someday set his throne in there. And this has got the Iranian Christians. I've been on Iranian television shows where they translate in Farsi to these Christians through satellite TV. You know, you can't do it on their state-censored media, but you can get on, like, Iran Alive Ministries, or Mo Sharia, been on the show. And they are so encouraged that there's going to be a restoration of the captives back. There's going to be the Lord's going to set his throne there, which is shocking because we're told in Isaiah 66 that heaven is the Lord's throne. And we're told in Jeremiah chapter 3 that in the Messianic kingdom, Jerusalem will be his throne. But so here we find out that something's going to happen where the same Hebrew word kisei, K-I-S-S-E, is going to have, something's going to be going on over there in Iran in that Elam area. So it's kind of fascinating. And I write about what I, in a book, A Nuclear Showdown in Iran, a book I have called Revealing Elam Prophecy, I write about this and what I think that means and that sort of thing. But, you know, that sounds like a nuclear disaster that will set off all kinds of problems. Perhaps the destruction of Damascus would follow. Perhaps the Psalm 83 Arab-Israeli war would follow. Ultimately, Ezekiel 38 would follow. So I think really, dear listeners, you need to be reading Jeremiah 49 and aware of this prophecy, because it may be the prophetic and biblical perspective of what you're worried about on Fox News and CNN and all that.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Bill, one of the most often asked questions that I get, and if I receive those as a pastor and Bible teacher, then I know that you are receiving this question a lot as a prophecy expert. Is America seen in end times prophecy?
Well, you know, that question comes up a lot, as you say, and there are several places where people think America could be, and some think that, you know, we're the unnamed nation in Isaiah 18, or that some people even go so far as to say we're in Revelation 17 and 18, America is the mystery of Babylon. There's various other places where people think we are. I personally think we are in the Bible, not in those places, but in Ezekiel 38, verse 13, as the merchants of Tarshish and their young lions. So the merchants of Tarshish would be either, the traditional commentaries are, the UK or Spain. Mm-hmm. And then their young lions would be the colonies that came out from the loins of those kingdoms. And that would, of course, be, if it was Spain, it would be South America and Central America, the Latino areas, versus if it was the UK, it would be America, Canada, you know, and that sort of thing. And so we have a group of protesters there. And in my book, The Now Prophecies, I have a chapter called Is America in Ezekiel 38. And also I have two other chapters devoted toward America in that book, because I believe the decline of America is a now prophecy, and I think it's substantiated prophetically because of how the young lions are portrayed in that prophecy. In that prophecy, Ezekiel 38, verse 13, Ezekiel 38, you've got nine coalition members spearheaded by Russia coming against Israel. They're the invaders. Israel's the victim. The Lord is the victor. He stops it with fire, hailstone, and brimstone. It'll be a supernatural defeat. Yeah. And there's a reason for that, and I'll tell you in just a minute. But America and the young lions, the merchants of Tarshish and the young lions, along with Sheba and Dedan, there's four other populations, not invading or joining with the invaders, but they're sitting on the sidelines, it appears, and they're asking the Russian invaders, what are you doing? Are you going to invade Israel for plunder and booty and great spoil? In other words, why are they simply protesting? The merchants of Tarshish, undoubtedly, that's a theme of commerce. They undoubtedly have some kind of commercial relationships with Israel that they're concerned about. Russia's trying to come after that prosperity, but they're unable to do anything about it. And, of course, the British Empire today, they can't do anything about it. The sun always sets on the British Empire. There's about 64 million people in the UK and about 94,000 square miles they've got control over. Once upon a time, when the sun never used to set on the British Empire, they had control over 458 million people and 13 million square miles. Things have changed. They can't fight off Russia and those armies. But what about America? So anyway, I believe we're there. I believe we're in a compromised, less than superpower position. In my book, The Now Prophecies, I explain the archaeological reasons why we're there, the biblical reasons, the geopolitical reasons. You know, we're the ones on the scene right now, active, trying to bring about Middle East peace, things like that. I bring that all up in the book, and I think when you read it, your listeners, if they read it, when they walk away from the book, they'll realize, hey, that is the most logical place America would be, and therefore this is concerning, because we're not coming to Israel's rescue, and we're not able to really stop Russia. Now, the reason the Lord stops it is because that's the other marquee event we talked about at the beginning of the show. Yes. Where are we at? Well, we're racing towards Ezekiel 38, and the Lord's going to stop that massive invasion, and that when he does stop it, and it'll be clear he stopped it, not the American forces or the Israeli Defense Forces. It says in Ezekiel 39:7, I will make my holy name known in the midst of my people Israel. They shall not profane it anymore, and the nation shall know I'm the Lord, the Holy One in Israel. Mm-hmm. So he's going to, through his people Israel, the chosen people of the Old Testament, in the land of Israel, the Holy One in Israel, the promised land of the Old Testament, two integral parts of the Abrahamic covenant, he is going to stop the Russian advance, and he's going to be able to say, I just made my holy name known in the midst of everybody, and I'm the one true God. Israel has a right to this land. I keep my covenants with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, required the Jews to be in the land and them to have possession of the land. And that's what's going to happen, and that's why that is such a monumental marquee event, and we're almost there. However, that prophecy I don't think is a now prophecy, Ezekiel 38, because It says Israel has to be dwelling securely in the midst of the land, without walls, bars, nor gates, and be very prosperous. And right now Israel's not dwelling securely, Mike, because they've got Psalm 83 countries that share common borders with them that aren't listed in Ezekiel 38 that have been Israel's notorious enemies throughout time that don't recognize Israel's right to exist presently. They've got terrorist populations in them, and they voted against their being in Israel in 1947 in the United Nations. They've got to be dealt with, and until they are dealt with, Israel will not be able to dwell securely, and they won't be dealt with through land for peace deals. The Bible tells us there'll be a war, and that's spelled out in Psalm 83 and many other supporting peripheral passages in Jeremiah 49, Zephaniah 2, Isaiah 11, and elsewhere.
Yes, I appreciate your treatment of this subject, Bill, in your book, and I encourage our listeners to pick up a copy of the Now Prophecies, Bill Salas. And also, you might do yourself well to pick up the other book, and that is Psalm 83. It talks about how Israel becomes the next Mideast superpower. One of the things that I was literally cheering when I read it in chapter 5 concerning America is you make the application, and I agree wholeheartedly, that America is currently under judgment. A lot of people say, well, now that the Supreme Court has tried to dictate that the law of the land is sodomite unions, that God's going to judge us. Well, the plain fact is that that is judgment. And I think that a lot of Christians are missing that point. So Romans 1:18 through 32 very much applies to America today, doesn't it?
It really does. That is the cornerstone verses that talk about how the Lord reveals his wrath upon a nation. And it goes through three different stages of abandonment. And what is being said there is that there's a digression of events in a nation that happens. One, they become ungodly. And when they become ungodly, they then become unrighteous. And in their unrighteous state, they start to suppress the truth. And, of course, the truth is that there is a creator.
Yes.
And that Jesus Christ is his son, the way, the truth, and the life in John 14:6. That begins to get suppressed. And then ultimately, because they no longer understand the truth that there is creation and a creator, they start to worship the creation rather than the creator. Mm-hmm. And that's what's being said there. And Mark Hitchcock quotes about that in Romans, in his book called The Late Great United States, an excellent book. It says, Romans 1, verses 18 through 25, sets forth the character and cause of God's judgment against a civilization. In short, these verses tell us that when people willfully reject God, he eventually reveals his wrath against them. People can't turn their backs on God with impunity. And so what Hitchcock points out is that these three stages of abandonment, we're told in Romans 1:24 that we are given over to the lust of the flesh. That's the first stage, that's sexual perversion. And then Romans 1:26, we're given over to vile passions, and that's homosexuality. And then in Romans 1:28, we're given over to a debased mind, which is moral decadence. And so the Hebrew word there is paradidiomi, excuse me, the Greek word for given over. And that is basically what happens. Like, for instance, it's one thing if you are given over to, you know, you make your mistakes and you're going to be given over to your own consequences. It's another thing, this word can be interpreted as that, you know, it's like you got a little little sailboat, toy sailboat on the water, and you wait for the wind to take it, or you can actually push it out in there, or like you're trying to, a child wants to go down the slide, you actually push him down the slide, he gets a faster boost going down. That's the concern of what's being said there. So that when you see these things manifest in a nation, and we've seen them manifest with homosexuality, June 26, 2015, same-sex marriages were approved. When you see these things happen, it means the Lord has already abandoned the nation. He's already given it over to judgment, and he's already revealing his wrath from heaven. And we had Franklin Graham say, I think it was in February or March of this year, saying, we've taken God out of the public debate. Franklin Graham says, I want to bring him back in.
Yeah.
And that's the situation. We have, for the last five decades, almost six decades now, going back to the time of the 60s, we have straight-armed God out of our society. We've taken him out of the schools with prayer and Bible reading in the 60s at the time of John F. Kennedy, who, by the way, later was assassinated. We had 1973 abortions approved by the Supreme Court. All these approved by the Supreme Court, the law of the land, with at the time of Nixon, who was now we've got babies being killed about a million a year. Nixon, of course, was impeached. Then you've had other things happen with George Bush, with the sodomy laws in Texas. And then ultimately, you had they couldn't define in 2013, I believe it was a Supreme Court case, they couldn't uphold the constitutionality of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. And so that, which said one man should be married to one woman, which Mike, you and I both know is a biblical model for marriage.
Right.
So, but we can't uphold the constitutionality of the biblical model of marriage. Therefore, we set the stage for the final judgment, you know, the final Supreme Court decision to approve same-sex marriages in the Obergefell versus Hodges case in 2015. So, you know, these are all dangerous biblical boundaries that we've crossed. You know, forbidden biblical boundaries of the past that nations have crossed and never regressed back from and have been judged for. Yeah. Sexual perversion, Sodom and Gomorrah, 2000 B.C., idol worship, the northern kingdom of Israel and destroyed in 722 BC by Assyria. And they were at the time, they were sacrificing their babies to false gods, the northern kingdom of Israel, as was the southern kingdom of Judah in 586 BC. And in essence, we're sort of sacrificing our children too by not realizing their lives don't matter. And then wickedness, right. Of course, the Assyrian Empire was conquered 612 BC by the Medes and the Babylonians. And anti-Semitism when Pharaoh's army is an example. The water converged on them at the Red Sea as they were pursuing the Hebrews in their flight, and that was about 3,500 years ago. So, you know, these are biblical examples, precedents, and, you know, we've got a lot of people wondering, you know, can we still have a Nineveh moment, you know, where there was a time where Jonah went to Nineveh, yeah. And he said, you're going to be destroyed in 40 days, and they repented. And so the Lord relented and didn't destroy them at that point. They were destroyed ultimately later. Jonah was around 760 BC, but about 140 or 50 years later, of course, they got destroyed. But the thing is, that's when people started thinking, well, 2 Chronicles 7:14,
yeah.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and forgive their sins and heal their land. So the thing, you know, people are still praying and have been praying for that kind of turnabout, you know, that we would get redemption and repent and have the Lord help us out here in this country. But, you know, there's other things to be concerned about. We might be past that point, Mike.
Yeah. That's exactly right. I hear people reference 2 Chronicles 7:14 a lot and pleading with God to turn the nation around. And certainly that is our hope, that we would receive a reprieve from what is very clearly God's judgment upon us. But I like to remind people, Bill, that in that passage of Scripture, 2 Chronicles 7:14, the key statement in there for me is that not just that people humble themselves and not just that they pray, but the key is that they turn from their wicked ways. Is it possible that we could overturn Obergefell and Hodges, which ruled in favor of sodomite unions? Could we overturn sodomy law? Could we outlaw abortions? Could we do all these things? Because it seems to me that if God's going to answer a 2 Chronicles 7:14 prayer, then we're going to have to turn from all of this wickedness and come back to holiness and righteousness. And I don't mean to be a doom and gloom person, because I'm not, but I just don't see it happening.
Well, yeah, and if you look at the present scenario with the presidential candidates, neither one of them are going to overturn the homosexuality. Donald Trump is actually pro-homosexual, as is Hillary Clinton, and they're certainly not going to reverse abortions. I mean,
right.
These are boundaries that are just not going to be, you know, removed. And the Supreme Court we've got right now is very liberal. We don't know what the outcome is going to be there. A lot of that depends on the presidential election. So in order to, make these kind of changes, dramatic changes have to happen in this country, yes, presently. And none of these presidential candidates are going to do that, in that's my right. estimation, that's no matter who wins. Right. You know, yeah. people think Donald Trump's going to come and, you know, he's the last Trump of the Bible. He's going to save everything.
yeah.
But, no, yeah. I'm sorry, folks.
Yeah.
he's not going to change homosexuality laws, and mm-hmm. that means you got another 4 years of that if he's president.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're on a very short fuse as a nation and the whole world on the short timeline at this point. We're racing toward the end of time.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that people need to realize is that God has policy in place for nations. And what he says in Jeremiah chapter 18, verses 9 and 10, he says that the instant, this is verse 7 and 8, he says, the instant I speak concerning a nation and concerning a kingdom to pluck up, to pull down, and to destroy it, if that nation against whom I have spoken turns from its evil, I will relent of the disaster that I thought to bring upon it. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting, okay? So he's saying, if I'm going to bring a judgment upon a nation because they deserve it, but they repent from that and turn from that, like you say, if my people will turn from my wicked ways,
yes,
like Nineveh did,
mm-hmm.
and turn,
yes,
then the Lord would relent from that disaster. We already know there's historical and biblical precedent for that, but Jeremiah goes on to say, and this is where I'm concerned for America, in verses Jeremiah 18, verses 9 and 10. Now, this is on the flip side. And the instant I speak concerning a nation and concerning a kingdom to build and to plant it, if it does evil in my sight so that it does not obey my voice, then I will relent concerning the good which I said that I would benefit it. Mm-hmm. So here's the point. We were blessed by God.
Yep.
We filled the void the British Empire did not do. They did not instigate the rebirth of the nation of Israel when they should have in 1917.
Yep.
They collapsed as an empire. We emerged as an empire. We were blessed as a nation for three primary purposes: to be a safe haven for the Jewish people, and that's why we've got so many of them living over here, roughly around 5 million or so, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
We were to be a beacon of Christianity to the nations of the world, and the Lord blessed us accordingly for that, and we have been. We've been probably the most effective nation in missionizing the world in the church age. And lastly, we were instrumental in the rebirth of the nation of Israel, which we did. Harry S. Truman was the president at the time. He was the first world leader to approve of the nation of Israel. Interestingly enough, the Shah of Iran was the second one. Now, of course, he's gone. And the Ayatollahs are in power with their fingers on nuclear technology. So, you know, things are really dramatic. Things have changed. But my concern is, if you don't have a Nineveh moment, if you don't have a Second Chronicles 7:14 happen, then you have Jeremiah 7:16, which says, therefore do not pray for this people, nor lift up a cry of prayer for them, nor make intercession to me for them, for I will not hear you. In other words, Jeremiah was told, regarding his people in Judah who were destroyed in 586 B.C. by the Babylonians, the Lord said to him, don't even pray for them anymore. They're not going to have an end of a moment. I know the beginning from the end. They're going to get worse. They're killing their babies. They're sacrificing them to Baal. Don't even pray for them. What I want you to do now, Jeremiah, I want you to get them ready for captivity of 70 years of Babylonian captivity. In Jeremiah 7:27, the Lord tells Jeremiah, therefore, you, Jeremiah, shall speak these words to them in Judah, but they will not obey you. You shall also call to them, but they will not answer you. In other words, your pleas are falling on deaf ears. And my concern is our pleas are falling on deaf ears in this country and in the professing Church of Christ in this country, who is not even paying attention, don't even think we're living in the last days, and pretty much think things are going along pretty well.
yeah. As crazy as that sounds, it's true. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, a lot of our listeners have probably been waiting for this moment, Bill, and that is Ezekiel 38. Chapter 9 in your book, you talk about that chapter, Ezekiel 38, being the marquee event. Why is that?
Well, that's it, because of all end times Bible prophecies, the Lord has chosen that prophecy to let the world know he's the one true God of the Bible. It says he's going to stop. So let's just take a quick look at it. Ezekiel 38, 1 through 5 pretty much talks about Russia coming together with a coalition of countries. We talked about who they were earlier, Turkey, Iran, and several other countries, powerful countries, coming against Israel. The verses 7 through 13 tell us Israel will be dwelling securely, they'll be wealthy, they'll be dealt without walls, bars, nor gates, which is not the case just yet,
right.
And that Russia's going to come after that. And then we get into verses 16 of Ezekiel 38 on, all the way to Ezekiel 39, verses 1 through 6, and we hear this amazing story of how the Lord is going to, there'll be a great earthquake, and that'll panic all the invaders, and they'll start killing each other with everyone sort of against each other, like it was in the Old Testament with Gideon and other examples like that, when the Midianites started killing themselves. Then it says there'll be fire, hailstone, and brimstone. And, you know, listen, folks watching this on Fox News are going to be beside themselves.
They're going to
go, what is going on here? Yeah. And they're going to go, that was the God of Israel. I mean, that had to be that. You're not going to be able to put that in the military textbooks. Then we're not going to be able to learn from that. No one will ever be able to duplicate that. And so what will happen then is the verse will ring out, listen, I have made my holy name known in the midst of my people Israel, and it's not going to be profaned anymore, and the nation shall know I'm the Holy One, and I'm God, the Holy One in Israel. That's the event. That's not the rapture of the church. It's not any other event. That's the event the Lord chose, and that's why he gave us 52 verses in Ezekiel 30 and 39 of the most descriptive Bible prophecy, all self-contained, anywhere else than anywhere else in the Bible, because he wants us to get it. You know, we don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand that prophecy when you read it. And it's one. It's, hey, here's Russia. Here's the deal. Oh, wow, look, there's the earthquake. There's the fire and brimstone. And the Lord just let everybody know he's the one true God of the Bible. And that's a marquee event. And it's going to happen. I put several reasons in my book why I believe it happens before the tribulation period and why it could happen after the rapture. I'm not saying it. We know that for sure. But the point is, if God's going to let the world know he's God, the Holy One in Israel, he's going to do that at a very strategic point of time on the end times line. So shortly thereafter, after he upholds his holy name, there's going to come this crazy guy on the scene amidst all the lawlessness with all deception and power and signs and lying wonders, and his name's the Antichrist is what we call him. And he is going to try to deceive people and get them to buy into his system and to worship him. And in the middle part of a tribulation period of 7 years, he is going to cause them to take a mark, a false prophet in him. And a mark, they will not be able to buy or sell unless they take that. And once they take that mark, which is they're voluntarily worshiping him and being involved in his system, whoever in the world does that, they then experience the wrath of God, and it's commonly taught they have lost the opportunity to have salvation. So the Lord is not going to wait till after that mark is implemented and people are making that decision and slap his forehead and say, oy vey, I wish I would have done this beforehand.
Right.
He's going to do it beforehand, and that's a big deal. We're heading right towards that right now. But the events that are going to happen before that, because Ezekiel 38, that event is not ready to happen, would be the disaster in Iran we talked about, the destruction of Damascus in Isaiah 17, the toppling of Jordan in Jeremiah 49 and in Zephaniah 2, the terrorization of Egypt in Isaiah 19 verses 1 through 18, the Psalm 83 final Arab-Israeli war, the decline of America, the expansion of Israel. Israel is going to grow into some territory, into Jordan. I put all the scriptures in the book, and probably the most encouraging of all is the rapture, the vanishing of the Christians. I believe that's a now prophecy. It could happen at any time. There's no signs. It's imminent. There's nothing standing in the way of the Lord coming to get us other than the Heavenly Father saying to Jesus Christ, our groom, our bridegroom, let's go get your bride, son. And when he says that to him, he will come in the twinkling of an eye. Not a split second will stand between him and his union with us. And that's so exciting. But once that happens, we're gone. There's nothing we can do to help anybody here to witness any further. And times get perilous after that.
Yeah. You make a very powerful point. And I want to really underscore this point to our listeners, Bill. Those of you who have friends, or perhaps yourself, perhaps you hold to a replacement theology concerning the church in Israel, I want to point you again to Ezekiel 39:7. My holy name I shall make known in the midst of my people Israel, and I shall not let my holy name be profaned anymore. And the nations will know that I am the Lord, the Holy One in Israel. That is a powerful verse to refute replacement theology.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I agree with you. And those are, like I said, the two integral components of the Abrahamic covenant, the people of Israel and the land of Israel. God told Abraham in the plan of redemption, he said, I'm going to make you a great nation, and your name will be great, and I'll bless those who bless you, and I'll curse those who curse you, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed. That's in Genesis chapter 12. And we find out from other verses subsequent to that, through your seed and through Isaac's seed, it goes through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, through Jacob's seed, all the families of earth will be blessed, meaning it's messianic. It's through the Messiah, Jesus Christ. Yes. And so that's the people in the land are critical there. You cannot put the church in there when it says, I will make my holy name known in the midst of my people, the church. It says in the midst of my people, Israel. It's the legitimate people of Israel and the legitimate land of Israel. He's in the Holy One in Israel. And I asked a friend of mine, Dr. Arnold Fruchtenbaum, who's a very good scholar, and you should get to know him, dear listeners, Dr. Arnold Fruchtenbaum of Ariel Ministries, A-R-I-E-L Ministries. I asked him, Arnold, how can anyone after Ezekiel 38 subscribe to replacement theology? And he said to me, and he's a Messianic Jew, very scholarly, graduated from Dallas Theological Seminary. He said, well, Bill, how can anyone be a replacement theologian after rebirth of Israel in 1948?
Right.
and he said they will continue to be replacement theologians even after Ezekiel 38. And I thought to myself, this is just so sickening. You know, and you brought up the point in the Reformation. You know, the Catholic Church is amillennial. They're not looking for the coming of Jesus Christ in the rapture.
Right.
They believe they've replaced Israel. Mm-hmm. Israel were the people of the promise, but they're the people of the fulfillment is what they say. So the promises and prophecies for Israel, they believe they will fulfill those. And so then when you say Martin Luther broke off with the Reformation, that was Reformation without transformation. And you're absolutely right. Luther himself turned out to be very anti-Semitic. He wrote a 65,000-word treatise called The Jews and Their Lies, advocating burning down synagogues and houses and things like that.
Yes.
So you're absolutely right. It is plaguing the church, not just Catholics, but Protestants as well.
Yeah.
And it's time for that to end. And the Lord will end it.
Yes.
But the bottom line is, whether they get it or not, that's up to them.
Yeah. Well, that's a perspective that we hold as Western Christians. How about the Ezekiel 38 perspective from Israel?
Well, the way they're going to look at that, you know, it's interesting because it says I'm going to make my holy name known in the midst of my people, Israel. Well, the way they're going to treat that, Israel's already kind of suspecting something's going on. You know, even Benjamin Netanyahu came over and spoke to the United Nations a year or two back and quoted prophecy in Amos, talking about the return of the Jews, and they're not going to be leaving again. They're coming, and I'm not quoting it appropriately, but in other words, they're seeing the victories they've had in 1948 when they were refugees and they were outnumbered in the Six-Day War they won in 1967 and how they survived the ambush of the Yom Kippur War in 1973. And they're beginning to realize that their God is protecting them, that God of Moses, that God Jehovah, they don't recognize Jesus as the Messiah. And so when they see Ezekiel 38 happen and Psalm 83 before that, in my estimation, and they're victorious on both fronts, and especially when they're victorious because of supernatural means in Ezekiel 38, they're going to want to, we're told in Ezekiel 39, they're going to cleanse the land, which is a ritual requirement of their ancient Mosaic law.
Yes.
They're going to want to build their temple. They're going to want to sacrifice animals and be the chosen people of the Old Testament and do it with Jehovah, not with Jesus. And unfortunately, that's going to lead them astray. And they'll actually sign a covenant with death and Hades, death and Sheol, we're told in Isaiah 28, confirmed by an Antichrist in Daniel 9. And they will want to build their temple, and that'll probably be part of the content of that covenant. You know, we'll sign on this so we can have our temple, because once we build our temple, our Messiah will come, and once our Messiah comes, he'll set up his kingdom. And once he sets up his kingdom, we don't care what's going on in the rest of the world, he'll take care of that. We get him here. So basically, they're going to do that, and then it says the Antichrist comes and destroys two-thirds of the Jewish people in the land in Zechariah 13:8, but a third of them come out, they become a faithful remnant, and Jesus comes for them, and they realize Jesus is the Messiah. But that's when they realize Jesus is the Messiah. Hosea 5:15 tells us that Christ will return to his place until they recognize their offense, speaking about his Jewish people, which is their generational rejection of him as the Messiah. in their affliction they will recognize their offense and they will beckon his return. So they won't get it after Ezekiel 38. They'll get it after the Antichrist is barreling down at them in the middle of the tribulation, trying to destroy the entire Jewish race, because he wants to destroy every last Jew. That'll keep Jesus stranded in heaven, because Jesus said in Matthew 23, when Israel rejected him, he says, "You will not see me again until you say, 'Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord.'" And there'll be a remnant who were fleeing, reaching out to Jesus, going, "Blessed are he, his name is, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Come quickly." Because the Antichrist is going to get us like he got the other two-thirds of us if you don't come really quick. So that's the end of the story, but we're not there yet. We got now prophecies to be aware of right now.
Yes. Yeah, that's absolutely right. You devote a chapter to Psalm 83, Bill, in your book, and it's a very interesting prophecy. There's a lot of debate going on concerning that prophecy, and it's not just a prophecy, but it's actually a prayer, and it's defined as an imprecatory prayer. Could you explain what that means?
Yeah, it's a prayer of lament. A lot of the Psalms are imprecatory, praying on behalf of Israel, praying to defeat their enemies. And indeed, it does have imprecatory aspects to it. But Asaph, who wrote it, he wrote 12 Psalms, and this is his most prophetic. And we're told in 2 Chronicles 29:30 that he was a prophet, a beholder of vision, a seer. And so he's writing about a concluding Arab-Israeli war. He's very specific about who's involved. It's a contemporary confederacy of Israel's present enemies that surround them. He talks about it. They come together. They want to form a plan to destroy the nation of Israel and banish the name of Israel forever. It says they form a confederacy. They consult together with one consent. He lists who they are. Lebanon to the north, where you got Hezbollah with 150,000 missiles now pointed at Israel. Syria, Iraq, where you got ISIS in there now. Jordan, the Palestinian refugees. The Hamas, you talked about them earlier. We believe Egypt and Saudi Arabia are in there as well. And now you throw in whatever other terrorist populations in that vicinity. And ultimately, they come against Israel, and the Israeli Defense Forces, ASAP, petitions for them to be empowered by the Lord and to defeat the confederacies. He uses Old Testament references in the books of Judges. And what happens is when they win, they no longer are oppressed by those enemies, which happened in those petitioned aspects of Psalm 83, verses 9 through 11. But it says they come because in verse 12 they want to take for themselves the pastures of God for possession. So they're not coming like Russia to take plunder and booty. They're coming to dispossess Israel of the land.
Yes.
And they want it for themselves. And for our time, that would mean they don't want peace with the Jews. They want peace without the Jews. They don't want a two-state solution. They want one more Arab state called Palestine. And that's what I believe is a real prophecy. You know, there is controversy on it. I wrote about this in 2008. Since that time, it's on the map, prophetic map. Hal Lindsey, Chuck Missler, David Reagan, many top-notch prophecy guys, many of the prophecy Calvary pastor guys, are Jack Hibbs, for instance. I've been on his TV show. They are advocating Psalm 83. The tough thing is people have been so focused on Ezekiel 38, they failed to kind of look at the reality that, you know, Israel's got to deal with the Arabs around them that aren't even listed in Ezekiel 38 before they can dwell securely. So I advise people to read my book, Psalm 83, The Missing Prophecy Revealed, and I answer every objection that people have toward this actually being a prophecy.
And that's a good segue to what we're seeing in the headlines today, Bill. Islam is playing a major role in the geopolitical scene for sure, and some say that the Antichrist will be Muslim. Now, my question is, what do you think about that? And will Islam play a major role in the Ezekiel 38 and Psalm 83 prophecies?
Well, Islam will play a major role in those prophecies because those are predominantly Muslim countries. Psalm 83, 10 populations that are all Muslim. Once they're defeated by the Israeli Defense Forces, that's going to be a serious punch to the gut of Islam.
Yeah.
Ezekiel 38, almost all those populations are Muslim as well. And once they're taken out by the Lord, that'll be a serious uppercut to their jaw. So by the time you get to the tribulation period, Islam is much, very much compromised and pretty much easily knocked down for the count. The issue with the Muslim Antichrist thing is pretty much centered on newspaper exegesis. You know, Islam is vibrant, it's growing, it's threatening. But the issue is that we're told that the Antichrist comes out of the people who destroyed the city and the sanctuary. Mm-hmm. That's in Daniel 9:26. We're told that, and that was Rome. They destroyed the city of Jerusalem and the sanctuary, the Jewish temple in 70 AD. No Jew will ever allow a Muslim to guarantee his security. Muslims who declare themselves like the Antichrist will to be a god, they'll deny the god of his fathers, we're told, that'll be a fatwa in his life. Mm-hmm. You can't, Allah is God and Muhammad's his prophet, and no one's going to stand up above that. So, you know, there's a whole list of reasons as to why he won't be a Muslim and why Islam will not be vibrant going into the tribulation. I'm actually looking for my book coming out after this. We'll have to do a radio show on is dealing with what happens after the rapture in that gap period before the tribulation, because it's not the rapture that starts with 7 years of tribulation. It's the confirmation of the false covenant by the Antichrist involving Israel.
Yes.
So there's a gap of things that happen there. And in that period of time, you're going to have a world religion come on the scene out of Revelation 17, the harlot world religion.
Yep.
Who is that? Some people would say that's, you know, that's America, that's New York City, that's Mecca, that's the Muslims. Joe Richardson's going to write a book about that. Mm-hmm. Some people think it's literal Babylon, Iraq being rebuilt, which, mm-hmm. you know, that's going to be quite an undertaking.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Some people think it's Jerusalem. Oh, I think it's Rome. And that's a Dave Hunt theory and many other people.
Yeah.
And so I'm not looking for a revival of Islam or an insurgence of Islam. I'm looking for other things to happen after the rapture. Of course, we won't be here for it, Mike, because we're... Yes.
Amen, brother. amen.
You know, Mary apparitions, things like that that have happened, they have an end game. And the Eucharistic miracles that have happened, you know, there's an end game. Satan's got plans for this stuff. That's not the real Mary of the Bible that the Catholics
That's
are
right.
making pilgrimages to in Fatima and Medjugorje and all these places, and they have a past of killing saints, and the harlot is drunk with the blood of the saints and the martyrs of Jesus. So we're getting off onto a different topic, but that's a fascinating book I'm going to write. No one's looked at that gap. It could be a number of years, and a lot of people have thrown a lot of prophecies into the seven-year tribulation period that maybe they don't all fit right there.
That's right.
So I'm going to unpack that in my next book.
Well, excellent, and I hope that you'll share with us now. When do you expect that to be out?
Well, as usual, I'm behind the eight ball. We're trying to get it out by Christmas. We wanted it to, not that it's like, you know, a sugar and spice and everything nice kind of Christmas present with, you know, you put bows on, but it's a very important gift for the holidays because it's talking about the future, very important future. So we're trying to get it out by Christmas and do pre-sales in November.
Okay. Well, let's stay in touch, Bill. I'd like to chat with you about that for sure. Let's send our listeners out on a high note. How can Christians, how can believers prepare both mentally, physically? Well, let's just say it this way. How can believers prepare mentally, physically, and spiritually for the now prophecies? These things we've been talking about, what can believers do to get ready?
Well, that really sort of is the takeaway from it all. What, you know, now that everybody's, you know, frightened out of their boots, oh no, what are all these things? What do we do about it? Well, that, you know, we can't leave them empty. We got to talk to them about it. There's actually two chapters at the end of the Now Prophecies book, one dealing specifically with the physical and emotional attributes, and then the other one is dealing with the spiritual attributes. Of course, the spiritual attributes, Mike, is the only safety we have is in any kind of event is in the Lord.
Yes.
So it's all about right relationship. If you're straying from the Lord, you need to get serious, get back with the Lord,
yes.
redeem the time. You don't have much time left, and you want to be available because people you love are going to go through a lot of stuff. And we try to encourage people to you know, make that decision if you haven't already made that decision. That's the most important decision you can ever make. And it's not just your eternal security that you get, your eternal salvation, but you get an abundant life. And you get to have, you get to walk with the Lord who through faith will reach into your life. You'll see him integrated. He will no longer be invisible. His fingerprints will be conspicuous and you will see he's responding to your prayers and he's very active in your life. And that's why you want to bring Christ into your life, whether you've done it before or not. The other physical things that you need to do, you just need to be wise. And I'm not a survival website or ministry like that, so there's certainly plenty of those that do. But I do emphasize the biblical precedent for being prepared. You know, people think, well, gee, you're just a Bible, you know, basher, you know, doomsday guy. That's why you got guns and, you know, you've got a fence around your house and all that. And I don't have a fence around my house, but I'm just saying, you know, the classic concerns is like, you're just a freak, right?
Yeah.
Well, but wait a minute, you know, that's not the case. I mean, you look at Noah, he was not they would have thought he was a freak, but, you know, he was doing what he was supposed to do. He was warning people, he was building and preparing an ark for his family, and when he did those things, he saved him, his family, and his posterity, and he glorified God. And Joseph did the same thing when he stored up for the famine. Not only the Egyptians were spared when the famine came, when during those years of plenty, they stored up for it. The Egyptians were spared, but Joseph's own family got hit by that famine in the land of Canaan. They had to come over, so his posterity was saved as well. So it's wisdom to take these prophetic bits of information we have and take them wisely, take them to heart. Don't just talk about them. The time for table talk about Bible prophecy is over, folks. It's time to get ready.
Yes.
These prophecies are going to roll off the parchment. They're going to pound on the pavement.
Yes.
And that's what we need to know, and we need to be prepared for that. So, you know, get right with the Lord. Figure out what is the best way to protect yourself if you don't have any electricity or can't get some ATM money for a week at a time. You know, most households only can survive 3 days. It's called Nine Meals Anarchy, and they learned that from Hurricane Katrina. You know, after 3 days, the pantries are dry, and you go out and you try to get diapers and food at Target, and you're just not going to get it. There'll That's be right. gangs out there, or the shelves will be gone, and then what are you going to do? Because FEMA's not going to come to everybody's rescue, especially if you got major catastrophes throughout the whole country.
Yes.
So you don't rely on FEMA, rely on the Lord, but also rely on these prophetic bits of information to prepare yourself wisely for what could come.
Yes, words of wisdom there, Bill, words of wisdom. The books we've been talking about, folks, The Now Prophecies and Psalm 83, The Missing Prophecy Revealed, How Israel Becomes the Next Mideast Superpower. The website is prophecydepot.com. And again, remember, if you're in Southern California, Bill does a radio program, Prophecy Update Radio. And of course, you can listen to that on the web too, I imagine. Bill, I appreciate you being with me today and talking through all of these very interesting subjects, very pertinent to where we're living today and the things that we're seeing in the news. So thanks again for taking the time.
All right, Mike, great. We'll get you that new book when it comes out, and we'll do another show.
That'd be awesome. God bless you, Bill.
God bless, Mike.
Thank you so much.
Soaring Eagle Radio is a production of Transforming Word Ministries and is released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes, follow us on Facebook, where you can discuss this episode. And, of course, follow Soaring Eagle Radio on Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad. And listen to every episode from our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. The opening audio montage collection was created by Micah 68 Productions. You can visit them on the internet at www.mika68.com for more information. Friends, remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to the believers meeting in Rome. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Thanks for tuning in today to the Soaring Eagle Radio program. For more information about the show, write us at Soaring Eagle Radio, 682 West Grand Avenue, Lima, Ohio, 45801. You may also contact Mike directly by email at the following address, Pastor Mike at WOH.